and the Department of Public Safety and Administration on the high level of suspensions and the overwhelming consistent loss of cases of senior management services. So that is part of our topic. I will come back to just elaborate, but I just need to indicate that the department, together with the institutions mentioned here, will recall that there were additional institutions that were identified to deal with this. Among them was the Auditor General, and through our discussions, we had to actually excuse the Auditor General, because part of what they actually amplified is that they would rather provide support to the institutions that are dealing with the matter rather than themselves being there. So, standing on the agenda, we'll have the remaining institutions that I've mentioned. But in addition to the exclusions from the Auditor General, we do have some apologies that I'm going to outline, which would indicate that we don't have the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council. They have apologized, and all of us would know that it is a situation, it's a period of negotiations that includes quite, that involves a lot of discussions on the negotiation tables, and therefore we did afford them that apology. Okay. Well, now, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, I'll just zoom into the apologies that we have. We have the following apologies. Honorable Manana will not be able to attend because he is having a doctor's appointment today. He was not well. The next apology is the Minister for Public Service and Administration, Honorable Roy Padiachi. This is due to other government business, the cabinet in Pretoria, as you would know that we have that clash of cabinet days on Wednesdays, and therefore the minister today will be held up and will not be able to be here, but I've seen the whole delegation from the department is here, and therefore we can be able to proceed with the meeting. Okay, with those apologies, including the apology from the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, we are going to be able to proceed with this matter. Okay, so in terms of the presentations, I don't know if there had been an agreement between the Public Service Commission and the department, you know, because we intend to get the presentation from the department first, and then it can be proceeded by the department from the Public Service Commission, if that is fine, you know, in terms of the arrangement. But maybe one has to elaborate on this matter, you know, because these are some of the critical issues that we wanted to deal with as this committee. These are part of the issues that we believe they constitute part of the matters that we see for the Public Service Commission. I mean, for the public service seminar. You will remember that we have identified critical areas as this committee during the period of oversight, which we believe that these are the matters that need further attention and they cut across for all committees. So this is one of the matters that we did identify. So the committee, during its oversight visits, we did engage the department together with the Public Service Commission and all other institutions on this matter, and we did request, you know, and gave them a period of a year to work on this matter to just give us an understanding. Part of what we actually want to identify is that we do want to speak about authentic facts rather than just thinking that this, you know, because the perception is out there, but we don't want to deal with matters in terms of perceptions. But what we wanted to do is to find out exactly what is the stance and what is happening, and in our interaction with the department together with the Public Service Commission, we thought we were going to allocate this day so that we deal with this matter. We are then going to allocate the department together with the Public Service Commission an opportunity to come and present on this matter. We will request those who will be doing the presentations to come and be in the front here so that we can be able to all see and talk to them. If they can be along here, the leaders of both delegations from the Public Service Commission and from the department. Well, of course, I will definitely have to acknowledge the commissioner from the Public Service who is here, Commissioner Sizani. I will have to acknowledge, together with the DG for Public Service Commission, who are both here. I'm sure they are the ones who will be taking on board matters of the Public Service Commission. We also have another DG from the Department for Public Safety and Administration. And, for the sake of not having confusion, and where each DG is it's located. DG DIPOFA is from the Public Safety and Administration. Not from the Public Service Commission. Okay, like we requested, the Department for Public Service and Administration will go first, while Commissioner Sizani and the DG are coming in front. Are you ready? Okay. So you will actually introduce yourself together with the delegation and take us through the presentation.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much, honorable members. From the Department of Public Service and Administration, I'm accompanied by two of the minister's advisors, Mr. Alvin Pomozorabia and Professor Daniel Plakis, and also staff from the ministry, Oliver, as well as Shamila. In our presentation, we thought we would combine it as requested by the committee with the inputs from the PSCBC. Unfortunately, we were not able to do that. There were coordination challenges in getting the information from their side. So the presentation is based purely on the work of the Department of Public Service and Administration. In the presentation, we'll give some brief introductory remarks and some statistical information in terms of cases involving precautionary suspensions, highlight some of the challenges that have been identified in this area, and then talk a little bit more about what is it that DPSA is doing to address these challenges. The issue of precautionary suspensions, we indicate that it's one of the aspects captured in the performance agreement signed between the minister and the president to ensure that the suspensions with full pay are finalized within the prescribed time frames. Just in terms of the work that was done previously, there was a study done by DPSA in 2010 looking at the management of discipline and incapacity, and one of the key issues there was that the cases were not being finalized within the 60 days that's prescribed or within the 90 days in cases where an appeal has been lodged. As we will hear a little later this morning, the Public Service Commission also conducted a study, released a report in June 2011 on the management of precautionary suspensions in the public service, and which also confirmed these findings about the prescribed 60-day period not always being met in the public service. What we are doing here today is to do a presentation based on data for the 2010-11 financial year around the handling of precautionary suspensions in the public service. And then we also talk about our interventions as DPSA to improve the situation and which interventions also speak to the recommendations made by the PSC in their report of June 2011. Towards the end of last year, having realized that one of the challenges faced in this area is information on cases of employees on precautionary suspension, we developed a template as DPSA, consulted with the labor relations officers in departments, and agreed on what information should be provided to DPSA with regard to misconduct charges cases. And we then sent out that template in January of this year to ask departments to provide us with information in this area. We, at this stage, have information from 22 national departments and 5 provincial administrations. In terms of provinces, we worked through the offices of the Premier so that they be the coordinating points. So, and we asked them to provide us with information looking at the 2010-11 financial year on employees on precautionary suspension. Thus far, the data that we have received shows that there was a total number of 356 employees, and this is right across. It's not just focusing on SMS, on precautionary suspension. And by and large, this number tallies with generally the trends in the public service, even from the report from the Public Service Commission, that roughly 400 employees at any given point in time are on precautionary suspension. We ask the departments to indicate how many of those cases for 2011 have been finalized, and the report indicated that 201 of those cases were finalized, and we also asked about the outcome of those cases, how many were in favor of the employer and how many were against the employer in terms of the outcomes. And 176 of those cases were in favor of the employer and 25 against the employer. We also wanted data on focusing specifically on members of the SMS, but this one is in terms of charges of misconduct in general, not just specific to suspensions. And for the 2010-11 financial year, the number was 216 SMS members whom charges were brought against, and 51 of those were on precautionary suspension. And of the 216 cases, 183 of them were finalized, and 165 of those finalized were in favor of the employer. We flag in these statistics because even if it's not for the whole public service, in terms of the numbers that have responded, there are some encouraging signals in terms of the numbers of cases that are being ruled in favor of the employer. Obviously, this is the just a step in terms of how we are trying to intervene in this area. We will go to the rest of the departments that have not responded as yet, so that we have a much fuller picture of the numbers of employees on suspension and the rate in which the cases are being finalized. We also asked with the teams that we're working with to identify, to share with us some of the challenges they experience in dealing with these cases. And we share those challenges with the committee this morning. One of them is that because of limited delegations to finalize cases and appeals, they tend to take longer with heads of departments and executive authorities not signing off files timeously. And a critical challenge also that has been raised is that senior managers and executive authorities do not always heed the advice of labor relations officers, where the labor relations officials are instructed to suspend in circumstances where it may not be warranted to suspend the employee, as provided in the disciplinary code and the SMS handbook. There are specific circumstances under which a precautionary suspension is warranted, specifically in relation to the employee posing a threat in the workplace, to the investigation itself that needs to unfold, and the safety of other employees. And otherwise, it should be possible to proceed with the investigation and the disciplinary procedure with the employee still at work. But they have raised this as a challenge, that they get instructed in circumstances where it may not be even be necessary to issue a suspension. The issue of skills and competences have been identified. Skills to conduct the investigations that are necessary, the prosecutorial skills, and the adjudication functions. And they also said there is a tendency also to use consultants who are not always familiar with the public service context. And the discipline information not always properly captured and reported on. And that's why one of these issues that we are raising in terms of the template that we have developed is that on a regular basis, we need to collect this information so that we have a clear sense of what is happening in the public service when it comes to handling cases of employees on precautionary suspension. What are we doing as DPSA to improve in this area? The first thing that we've done is we've developed a guideline, a draft guideline on precautionary suspension, which will be taken through to Cabinet and then to the rest of the public service. We've consulted with colleagues in the governance and administration cluster of Foresight on this guideline. But there are very important principles that we're trying to push in this guideline. The first one is that discipline should be managed by management. So it's not a responsibility that just gets outsourced to lawyers and consultants. The second critical issue here, and this we believe will make also a big difference, is that if you suspend and within 60 days you have not been able to conclude the investigation and have the hearing, the suspension should automatically lapse so that the rest of the disciplinary process can continue with the employee back at work. And we say that there may be circumstances where, due to the complexity of the case, it's necessary to get an extension, but that, and this is an issue that the Public Service Commission also raised in its report, that extensions in special circumstances should only be granted in consultation with the Minister for Public Service and Administration. And in this way, we believe that if people are suspended and nothing gets done, such as having the investigation conducted and having the disciplinary hearing held, that within 60 days the employee should come back to work. We also say as a key principle in the draft guideline that although there is 60 days allowance in terms of having the hearing, that the employer should, however, strive to complete investigations within 14 days of suspension instead of waiting for the 60 days. Another critical aspect that we raise in that draft guideline is that employees must be given an opportunity to state reasons why they should not be suspended before the suspension is effected. And this, we hope, will also deal with those instances where people get suspended where a suspension is not warranted. So if employees are given this opportunity to state to the employer why a suspension in their particular circumstance is not warranted, we believe it will encourage and in fact push the employer to make sure that the suspensions are only used in those circumstances where they are warranted. I've already spoken about the issue of labor relations officers. We've established a national labor relations management forum comprising labor relations officers from various departments. And one of the things we focus on within this forum, apart from sharing of information, is also on focusing on capacity building initiatives. Capacity building, looking at investigations, looking at prosecution, looking at adjudication functions of labor relations officers across the public service. So we believe that this will be a contribution towards the capacity challenges that have been raised in terms of making sure that cases are dealt with speedily. We also review in the disciplinary code and procedures to identify and address those areas which tend to render the system inefficient. And as I indicated, we also have developed a template which we issued in January this year to all departments to report on these cases, and it will be a regular feature so that we are able to collect credible information on employees who are on precautionary suspension in the public service. Although the template goes beyond that, it looks at cases of misconduct in general, with those on precautionary suspension just being an element of that. Based on this information that we receive, we now also looking at creating an automated case management system so that we are able to generate progress reports on suspension timelessly. And also, as part of our budget for 2012-13, we have set aside funds to establish what we call centralized disciplinary capacity. In DPSA. This capacity will then identify priority cases in departments of employees who are on precautionary suspension, where departments are saying they don't have the capacity to deal with these cases. We will then avail the capacity to assist with the investigations, to assist with the prosecutorial work, to assist with adjudication functions. And we'll be rolling that out during the course of this 2012-13 financial year. We also, as part of our annual performance plan for 2012-13, have included a review of the Public Service Act and regulations. One of the critical issues here, as indicated in the report of the Public Service Commission around departments having to consult with the MPSA first before they grant an extension. For a suspension. That is a matter that will have to be reflected in the amended public service regulations. Otherwise, the MPSA may not have the authority to get departments to consult with him before extensions are granted. So that's one of the things that the amendments will be looking at. But I think the point that we also want to end of the presentation with is that because discipline is a decentralized function, ultimately individual executive authorities and individual heads of departments must be held accountable. Information on these matters is contained in annual reports of departments. So as part of considering the annual reports of individual departments, that is another opportunity where executive authorities and heads of departments should be held accountable for making sure that they speedily deal with the cases of employees on precautionary suspension. These are the interventions, honourable members, that we are putting in place as part of our program of action for 2012-13 going forward to make sure that we address the challenges that exist in this area of dealing with employees on precautionary suspension. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG Dikofa, and thanks for those that information that you have actually given out. Let me allow the members, honourable members, this is part of a feedback that we are getting out of the assignment that you have actually given out, and I would like to hear from yourself. How would you like to engage in this discussion? Do you want us to take the next presentation, finish up with all the presentation, have the whole picture before we start engaging with discussions, or would you really want to start immediately with some discussions? Honorable Mara, are you commenting how we should proceed? Yes. Oh, sorry, Honorable Dutoit.
It's okay.
No longer confused, it's just a mistake this time. Honorable Dutoit?
He's got the glasses, I've got the O's. Okay, I think we proceed, otherwise it's getting too long and drawn out. Maybe we could just wrap up this this part of it, have a few ideas, because this is a broader view, so we can focus on that, I think.
Okay, if members want it that way, I think I then can allow some issues for discussion, but safe to indicate that part of, you know, the, you know, sometimes if you have a perception that the case, the state loses cases, you know, it becomes a song until people actualize it. At some point, we do need to deal with statistics. Part of why we wanted this is that once we zoom and deal with this matter, you know, because it's part of what is going to be looked at on the oversight public service seminar, we definitely have to get proper statistics. We will engage with discussions, but at this point in time, let me allow members to then discuss. I'll start with yourself, Honorable Doit, at the end, and then I'll follow with Honorable Mare. Both of you in that sequence.
Thank you. I see on slide 5 as a referral to 22 departments that, and 5 provinces that's come back to you. I was just wondering what happened about the others and who are they, because maybe those that did not come back to you, maybe those that are presenting us with a bigger problem. I see that if I look at what you say here, it looks like at this point we're fighting a losing battle, because it says here in slide 7 that the files are not being timely signed off, etc., etc. There are certain constraints in labor relations. Senior managers do not always heed advice, and yet we say that these are exactly the levels that must enforce this. Fine, but it seems that we have a major problem here. I don't know how we're going to address that. The other thing is that on slide number 8. I see that it's a draft. Now, I was just thinking when this is going to be finalized. And then on the second one, it says that precautionary suspension should lapse after 60 days and dismissal to disciplinary process to continue with employee at work. Extension in special circumstances in consultation with MPSA. That could take some time, but that is a dangerous situation, because sometimes, especially when officials are in a powerful position, they're not juniors, they're senior or middle management, or even if we're looking at the integrated or single public service, we're going to start going into the third level of government on local level, and there. Even you can have heads of departments and executive directors that are the culprits. Now, what do you do now? Because a lot of the investigations and a lot of the information is embedded in the people working for this person, under him, not the people over him. So now this person is still there. It could be a lot of influence. I mean, if you don't take possession of the guy's computer and his laptop or whatever immediately, the vital information can be just, you know, wiped out, especially in the financial divisions, or if there's a financial function. So we have a real challenge here on this. I don't know how you're going to address that. And the other thing that bothers me is that we say that I understand the point that you make around lawyers and getting consultants involved in the system. But my experience is that as soon as somebody is given the opportunity to say why they should not suspend the person, usually his lawyer assists him. Now already we've got these shortcomings we've seen, and now the employee has got his lawyer, labor lawyer, and he's writing the letters why he should not be suspended. I went in my constituents, we went through cases like this. So then you have a real challenge. So you can't have labor lawyers going up against department officials. They will never smoke the pipe with them. So you're not going to solve the problem. So you'll have to pull in some heavyweights somehow to counter this. So to give the employer also a fair chance, not only the employee. I hope I'm not being misquoted here. I'm not saying people shouldn't have representation. I'm just saying the employer should have an opportunity to use lawyers. So then on the way forward, on the first bullet, slide 10, to improve the capacity and skills for, amongst others, etc. Okay, the question is how. But I guess that detail you can't discuss here, but we need to know that somehow. And the other one, the second bullet, is problems which render the system inefficient, when? So I'm just worried that we are looking here at a mountain of problems. And with those that I've mentioned, I think it gives us enough to think about if we want to go forward here. Thank you.
Honorable Marais.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, DG. DG, quite a number of issues that you've mentioned, I think, is a bit of a concern. You have mentioned about HODs and EAs that do not sign off files timely, etc. That quite a number of things that refers to the different departments and the HODs, with all due respect, not doing their job. Now, can you tell us, because I mean, if I can just add, I think we know that for any democracy to develop and grow, for any economy to grow, you need a stable state and a civil service. You need an effective state and obviously a civil service. Now, if those HODs are not doing their job, what have you done to those? And can you tell me in how many cases there was disciplinary actions against those HODs, they're not doing their job? On a question of ours to the department in last year, and that is something that you haven't mentioned in your presentation, your department has responded to us that in the national departments, it takes on average, or there are cases up to 243 days. In provincial departments, 440 days. So it seems like on average it is more than, it's about 284 days more than the prescribed 60 days. Now, if you look at the number of cases that you've mentioned, you must quantify what is going on in the loss to the fiscus. So then to say after 60 days those people must just come back, it means that there's a huge lot of cases that has not been dealt with in terms of the prescriptions. Now certainly those number of days, and I think your response was about 94 million that has been paid to 365 senior management officials in the national departments, and about 15.5 million to provinces, if I quote that correct. So it is a huge loss, and surely something must be done to bring that, if it's not the 60 days, to reasonable time after 16 days. It seems like the exception has become the rule. And if I see your suggestions and proposals, it seems like nothing will be done to those culprits not doing their jobs as HODs, and purely allowing the people back to work is going to set an example of, you know, doesn't matter what I do, I'll anyway come back to work. And obviously the environment, and it might be a hugely unhealthy environment in the situation to bring those people back. So surely the problem is much, much bigger. To come with a couple of rules that will again not be implemented cannot be enough. So surely there must be some disciplinary steps being taken against those HODs, because the reasons that has been mentioned is all It is all within the human capability of doing that. And also, in other words, not want to do that. So there's your biggest problem. And not bringing in more rules and making sure that people comply with the rules. What will be done to those who do not comply with that? Because just to bring in more is just that, you know, the handbook is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we must try to make it more simpler to comply so that everybody understands exactly what is expected from them. And if I don't comply, this is what will happen to me if I don't comply. If you can please respond to that, because it's a much, much bigger problem than I think that your presentation is showing us.
Okay. DJ Ripofa, any responses on the issues raised?
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members, for those questions. I think in terms of those, as I indicated, that we asked for the information in January, for us it's a new template that we have introduced, and we are following up with those that have not yet responded, but we can quite easily make that information available to the committee in terms of those that we are still pursuing from whom we have not received information. But as Honourable Dutoit says, it's correct from the interaction we've had with labour relations officers that there are times when they believe precautionary suspensions are used when circumstances don't warrant that the person would be suspended. And it may be useful perhaps just to give examples here. If somebody, a senior manager, comes to work under the influence of alcohol, is it really necessary to suspend the person to deal with that form of misconduct, as opposed to those serious ones where in the security cluster somebody falls asleep on duty who's guarding prison facilities, for example, because the nature of the seriousness of the misconduct needs to be taken into consideration. And the issue here is that if they are instructed that suspend the person, even if they believe it's not warranted to suspend the person, they will go ahead and suspend the person. That is why the issue of stating, making representations before the suspension becomes important. And this is the point Honourable Mare has raised, that in those circumstances where you are expected as an employer to seriously consider the circumstances, whether they really warrant a suspension or not, that then it shouldn't be a suspension, because, and that doesn't mean that we drop the case. It simply says that the case continues, the investigation continues, the disciplinary procedure continues with the person at work, because otherwise you are paying the person and staying at home, and they should be at work. Even in terms of the 60 days, when the 60 days lapse, it doesn't mean that the case is closed. It means that you have had 60 days with the person away from work to conduct the investigation, to get all the information you need to get from computers, and so on and so on. You have not used that time. So continue with the disciplinary procedure with the employee at work so that you save the state money. Unless there are those circumstances, as you point out, where it becomes dangerous for the employee to be at work. But we don't believe that all circumstances warrant the employee to be away from work for such a long period beyond the 60 days. What we hope it will also do is to push people to really use the 60 days much more productively, because otherwise at the moment you just know that you can always, by mutual agreement, extend the 60 days and then you continue to pay the person while they are at home. Honourable Dutoit also raises a question about the time frame for the review of the disciplinary code. This is a project that is on our 2012-13 annual performance plan, which we've presented to the committee. So it definitely has to be completed as part of the 2012-13 program of action. And the committee can monitor us as part of us presenting quarterly reports on the progress against our work plan. The issue of heads of de- departments who do not sign off timelessly, who give wrong instructions, and so on. I think because we have not, in this particular process, collected data on specific departments and specific cases where we are asking labor relations officers, well, give us specifics in terms of your department, on which case did the head of department delay, and so on and so on. It's difficult to respond at this stage to say how many HODs, who were they, and what has been done. But I think in the last slide when I raised that bullet point on the management of discipline eventually being a decentralized responsibility to individual departments, that is a matter that can be taken up as part of holding individual departments accountable. So that when we look at their annual reports and reflect their statistics, a question can quite easily be asked, why did it take so long? And executive authority, what did you do in terms of the actions against the head of department? Because it's information that is captured as part of the reports that get provided. But we believe that these measures, firstly of requiring that people be provided with an opportunity to state their case, that it will reduce the casual use of precautionary suspension, so that it only gets used when it becomes necessary. And secondly, the issue of the 60 days lapsing, that the 60 days can actually be used very productively. As part of that recommendation where we talk about an automated case management system, one of the reasons there is that we're saying that if we're able to monitor it much more regularly as DPSA, we will be able to identify cases that are taking too long, and then the NPSA can intervene and say, why is this case taking this long? And we believe that will be a very useful intervention as well in terms of assisting with the speedy finalization of the cases. Thank you.
I don't know, Honourable Members, that could we allow the next presentation, because other matters are really contained within the next presentation, and I'm afraid of a situation where we might ask questions that are contained in the very first presentation. Even if it relates to this one, we can still come back to it, but I'm really worried because the two presentations are related. I do accept that there might be issues that Honourable Members still wanted to raise, but can we then request this one so that we can see if there are still matters that we want them to be asked. But just to indicate that to the department that, okay, let's listen to the next presentation, but we, you know, in the nature of the assignment that we actually requested the department to do, I'm not very sure if they've gone to the bottom of what we actually wanted. The information is like on a template. We're not very sure how the template was issued to departments. Not all departments responded. It doesn't give us an overall picture. Maybe it's part of what we've been discussing with the Public Service Commission at some point, that sometimes working on specifics doesn't project the actual picture. We understand, we appreciate what we already have, but possibly just to go into most of the suspensions, these were the issues and why we managed to succeed because of this and that. Therefore, we just think that let's listen to the next presentation, but it didn't go right to the bottom, actually, because it was a long-term assignment, and we will still get back to it, you know, because it's part of the issues that constitute the public service oversight seminar. Can we then request the Public Service Commission to proceed with a presentation? Commissioner Susan?
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. We would also want to apologize for the chairperson. Would have loved to be here, but has had to attend to other matters, so I am standing in for the chairperson. I'm accompanied today by our DG, Richard Levine, Professor, and Mrs. Mashau Matari and Jules Kwedi from the Office of the Chair. So we will take the presentation, which will be presented by the DG, and then we'll deal with the questions together.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Commissioner Cizani, colleagues. In this presentation, we'll give a brief introductory or some brief introductory comments, and then we'll look at some of the sources of information that we've used to construct the presentation, as well as key findings of various reports, particularly the June 2011 Public Service Commission report that the DG of DPSA has already referred to. We'll look at some of the challenges faced by departments in managing precautionary suspensions, and then we'll look at the recommendations and the conclusion. We do have a situation where there is a widespread perception that there are thousands and thousands of employees in the public service who are placed on precautionary suspension over a lengthy period. And the perception is worsened by the news that we get from time to time that certain senior management service members have exited the public service while they're actually on precautionary suspension. Now, we did conduct a study, which has already been referred to in the DPSA presentation, in a sample of departments covering the financial years of 2008-09 and 2009-10. But what we did for this meeting is we actually went into the available data in the annual reports for the financial year 2010-11. The data from the provinces was a bit problematic for this rapid appraisal, but in the national departments, given the fact that these are audited annual reports, we believe that the data is reliable, and I think some interesting things come out of this latest available data around the extent to which precautionary suspensions are affected, and also the financial implications, and we'll get onto that in the course of the presentation. When we look at the regulatory framework, the Labor Relations Act of 1956 provided a regulatory framework up until 1994, and it wasn't really prescriptive about matters relating to suspensions. And prior to 1994, departments relied largely on the precedents from the decisions of the courts for guidance on whether or not to suspend employees. During the pre-1997 era, HODs could also use their discretion to suspend employees as a precautionary measure with or without compensation. But the Constitution of 1996 did bring about changes, including the repeal of the provisions in the Public Service Act on precautionary suspension without remuneration and the corresponding public service regulation. Section 23(1) of the Constitution does provide that every employee has a right to fair labor practice, including the presumption of innocence. Furthermore, it is important to note that if there are going to be changes to the provisions of policy relating to precautionary suspension, that will be the subject of negotiations. So we have a situation in terms of the regulatory framework where we have the Constitution, the Labor Relations Act, and then enabling acts of various service departments, the disciplinary codes and procedures for the public service as well as for service departments, and the SMS handbook. That's really what provides us with the prescripts on precautionary suspensions. The June 2011 report also sort of did some best practice analysis and benchmarked South Africa against the UK and Kenya. And the situation in the UK is more similar to South Africa in terms of the imposition of precautionary suspension with pay. But in Kenya, there are provisions which allow for public servants or civil servants to be put placed on precautionary suspension without pay if there's prima facie evidence around misappropriation of funds, if there is a situation where a public officer has been criminally charged and is awaiting trial, or if a public officer has been convicted of a criminal offense. So there are provisions within the Kenyan situation which allows for suspension without pay. In any event, as I've indicated, is over and beyond the report. We have also looked at the annual reports, and that will information will come later in the presentation. But in the report, which was published by the Commission in June of 2011, based on desktop research, literature review, and interviews conducted with the relevant officials in a number of departments, which were really the National Departments of Home Affairs and Public Works, Department of Transport, Department of Education, and Department of Public Works in KwaZulu-Natal, Department of Education and Department of Public Works, Roads and Transport in Mpumalanga, and Department of Education, Department of Transport and Public Works in the Eastern Cape. So that's really the sources of data for this presentation. Now, moving on to the findings of the 2011 June report, the sample departments indicated as their reasons for precautionary suspensions that officials are placed on suspension depending on the nature of the charges. Now, if we look at the prescripts, what emerges from the prescripts that I mentioned is that the basis for precautionary suspension is really the seriousness of the allegations, the need to avoid interference with investigations, safeguarding of state property, and the safety of potential witnesses. So that's really what emerges from this prescript. And the findings from the study, which was concluded in 2010-11, indicate that the nature of charges which employees placed on precautionary suspensions faced include financial misconduct, insubordination, failure to bank state money, theft, fraud, misuse of state property, drunken driving, corruption, sexual harassment, unauthorized expenditure, gross negligence, which leads to the loss of state money, and the violation of tender processes. In terms of the duration of the precautionary suspensions, what we found is that, and what has been mentioned also by the DG of DPSA, is generally there's non-compliance with the prescribed 60 days period to institute disciplinary hearings. And on average, the sample departments took more than 3 months to conclude the investigations. The KwaZulu-Natal Department of Transport reported that it takes more than 10 months before instituting disciplinary hearings. And the Mpumalanga Department of Education reported that on average, precautionary suspensions last for 2 months, which is the shortest in terms of the departments that were sampled for the study. In terms of why the precautionary suspension is extended, a number of reasons emerged through the engagement with the sample departments, and these include unavailability of representatives of the employees charged, unavailability of witnesses, request for additional information, which is unavailable by the time that the disciplinary hearing has been scheduled, unavailability of interpreters, an employee being booked off sick, a criminal case may have been opened and it must run concurrently with the disciplinary procedure, and the recusal of the presiding officer. The review of precautionary suspensions in the sample departments indicated that this was performed on average between 1 week and every 3 months. We also wanted to find out in those sample departments what leads them to transfer an employee as an alternate to placing him or her on precautionary suspension. In the study, only 3 of the departments indicated that they preferred transferring an employee as an alternative to precautionary suspension. The Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal considered a potential financial loss to be incurred by the employer in having employees placed on precautionary suspension but not performing their duties, so that's why they uh, adopted a particular stance to the issue of transferring an employee as an alternative. The Department of Home Affairs assesses the image of the department in considering the employee being transferred. So they think that that undermines the integrity and the profile of the department. The Public Works Department indicated that they do look at the issue of transfer, but then they look at the issues around the suspension and the profile of the particular employee before affecting a transfer. But really, the conclusion emerging from the study is that departments are not really making adequate use of this possibility of transferring employees instead of suspending them. And at the bottom line, I think what we need to say is that there is a potential saving to the state financially, and we'll look at some of these implications on the 2010-11 financial year, where we actually see that it's quite costly to the state, this issue of precautionary suspension on full pay. Now, if we look at the actual numbers emerging from the study in the sample departments, that's for the financial years 2008-09 and 2009-10, a total number of 293 employees were placed on precautionary suspension. During the 2008-09 financial year, 103 employees were put on precautionary suspensions, compared with 190 in the 2009-10 financial year. We also did a breakdown around the levels, salary levels of employees placed on precautionary suspensions. At levels 1 to 8, it was 228, 9 to 12, it was 46, and 19 SMS members during the period under review in the sample departments. In terms of the cost implications, the national departments for the two financial years that were reviewed, the total cost was 5.4 million. The eight provincial departments spent 15.6 million for the same period. So collectively, for the sample departments in the two financial years, we're looking at 21 million as a financial implication of employees placed on precautionary suspension. We also looked at the role of labor relations components, and the DG of DPSA has obviously made a number of statements on the need to strengthen the capacity in these components, because they are the components that must provide advice to management on matters related to disciplinary procedure. But it was established that not all supervisors and labor relations officers are familiar with disciplinary matters, and some supervisors in provincial departments did not even know what precautionary suspension means through the engagements that we had with them. So there's a clear need to build up capacity around the management of discipline, and I think that is acknowledged in the various interventions that the DPSA intends taking during this year. The next slide shows the outcomes of some of the disciplinary cases concluded where employees were placed on precautionary suspension during those two financial years. There were 153 cases pending, 52 dismissals, 18 not guilty. There were 11 appeals. Final written warning was issued in the case of 7, demotion in 4, charges not laid 3, and so on and so forth. That's in that table. One of the key issues, also touched on by the DG of DPSA, is whether departments have internal policies relating to precautionary suspensions. And out of the 10 sample departments, only one produced a departmental policy. That was the KwaZulu-Natal Department of Transport. Three indicated that they had policies, but they did not actually produce copies of those policies. The rest indicated that they didn't have policies, but that they rely on the PSCVC's resolution number 1 of 2003 for managing precautionary suspensions. It is important to note, however, that the PSCBC resolution does not elaborate adequately on the procedure to be followed when precautionary suspension is under consideration. And therefore, it is important to emphasize that the departmental policy is a critical tool in managing discipline, including precautionary suspension. And ideally, this policy should deal with issues like the reasons for suspending an employee, the charges preferred, the consideration of transfer as an alternative, and the reasons for the extension of the suspension period. Now, moving on then to the work we did around the 2010-11 annual report, because we wanted to try and share with the committee what is the latest situation, what is the baseline we're looking at the moment. So obviously the most reliable data source would be the annual report and the latest annual report. Unfortunately, we've just completed the 11-12 financial year, so that data would not yet be available, but at least for the 10-11, we were able to do some work. Now, as I've indicated, the information on the provinces was incomplete, so in terms of the rapid appraisal that we undertook, we weren't able to come with that information, but we were able to look at the information from national departments. And during the 2010-11 financial year, a total of 1,559 employees were placed on precautionary suspensions. The highest number were in the South African Police Service, 869. Correctional Services had 471. Justice and Constitutional Development had 69. And the Department of Defense had 38. In 18 departments, less than 10 employees were placed on precautionary suspensions, including agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, arts and culture, basic education, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, depending on the level of the suspended employee, the financial implications may be very high for a particular department which has a relatively low number. There were a number of departments who reported that no employees were on suspension: economic development, military veterans, DPSA, science and technology, and women, children, persons with disabilities as well. The next slide just gives an indication of the detail. We just looked in the previous slide at the departments with the highest numbers. So that at least gives a sense of per department the numbers of employees on suspension. And the following slide just tries to give some perspective around the perception. Of course, the perception may or may not be close to the truth, and it may be blown out of proportion, but in any event, if we look at the actual numbers of employees in the respective financial years which are covered in the various information and data that we brought to the committee, it ranges from 1.1 to 1.2 million public servants. And if we're looking at national level, we sort of get a perspective. So at the national level in the 2010-11 financial year, 0.12%, that is 1,559 of total employees in the public service, were suspended as a precautionary measure. The next slide looks at the salary cost for 2010-11. And according to the annual reports of national departments, a total amount of 51.9, that's about 52 million, was paid to the 1,559 employees who were placed on precautionary suspension during the 2010-11 financial year. And then if we look at the breakdown, we see a number of departments paying out a lot of money, 8 million by the South African Police on 869 employees, Correctional Services 14 million on 471 employees, Justice and Constitutional Development 11 million on 69 employees, and the Department of Defense about half a million on 38 employees. But then, like I indicated, it would depend on the ranks, because you do have a situation whereby Department of Public Works, for example, only had 3 people on suspension and the cost to them was $1.15 million. And then also DTI had 10 officials on suspension at a cost of $2.7 million. So obviously it depends on the salary levels. If we look at the graph which follows on slide 18, it's a depiction of the suspension salary cost for 2010-11, which the honourable members can look at. And then we can move on to the issue of the challenges faced by departments. And this refers back to the in-depth study we conducted for 2008-09 and 2009-10 financial years with the sample departments, where the officials identified a number of challenges, which included the fact that poor monitoring of precautionary suspensions does lead to officials on suspension not rendering any service to the department for extended periods pending the finalization of their cases. And of course, unless such posts are vacated by a suspended employee, those posts cannot be filled. So there's also a productivity issue around people on precautionary suspensions. What are the productivity implications for the public service? And I think increasingly we do need to look at the issue of productivity in the public service, particularly in the light of the kind of salary settlements that we've had in recent years. I think we do increasingly need to look at what productivity is like in the public service. Also then what you have is within a particular department an official is placed on a precautionary suspension. That means that a colleague of that particular employee must take over the responsibilities and duties. It may be one or two or three, however many, but it means that other colleagues need to take on those responsibilities of those who have been placed on suspension. And then, of course, what we've indicated is around capacity. There is inadequate training of key role players in disciplinary procedures, and that also increases this problem of unnecessarily long periods of precautionary suspension. Of course, the poor compliance with the timeframes by investigators and presiding officers is another issue that emerged during the study. And investigations taking very long, which leads to delays in the actual formulation of charges, is another challenge that emerged. There's also the issue of the capacity of presiding officers, employee representatives, employer representatives and investigators, and that leads to further delays and extensions. So we really need to focus on building the necessary capacity, even if we may change guidelines, systems, procedures. Building capacity is going to be critical in terms of dealing much more effectively with this issue of precautionary suspension. Now, in the light of the work that we've done, we've made a number of recommendations, and the one is that departments must develop their own internal policies, supported by DPSA, and clearly in terms of what the DPSA intends doing going forward, it looks like this recommendation is going to be implemented. We do need to ramp up training around disciplinary procedure, including the management of precautionary suspensions. We also need the development of a database, and the DPSA is taking steps, as we've heard from the presentation, to address this problem, because I think information is often critical to the management of some of these issues, and clearly the information base is not satisfactory right now. Even the information that we brought to this committee, we couldn't get it at the touch of a button, per se, which may become possible going forward, but we had to do quite a bit of work around the annual reports, and it was quite revealing as we saw. We do need to ensure that precautionary cases are recorded in detail, with reviews being conducted, preferably on a weekly basis. And Due to the high cost implications, it is imperative that departments prioritize the immediate finalization of outstanding cases from previous years. Labor relations units must obviously play the active and leading role in keeping track of all cases of misconduct and ensuring consistency in the reporting on the management of precautionary suspension, and hopefully the DPSA's actions will help to facilitate this. There should also be a database of capable presiding officers and investigators internally within departments and centrally through the DPSA and offices of the Premier. There is some central information. It's not as comprehensive as it should be. But even at the level of departments, they must have that information ready so that they can just mobilize and act upon it. And then also, departments need to explain what measures they've taken against managers who delay conclusion of disciplinary procedures. And in the case of precautionary suspension of SFS members, including HODs, when we extend the 60-day period, and this should only be made in consultation with the MPSA and in terms of what the DPSA intends doing, this recommendation has been taken on board. And also, we do need to look at the option of transfers to precautionary suspensions and to raise the issue with departments so that they become aware of this as an option and begin to make better use of this particular option. In conclusion, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Commissioner Cizani, colleagues, we are concerned by the low level of compliance with the timeframes prescribed in the management of discipline, and this does result from a lack of understanding of disciplinary procedures in the public service. A key issue does remain the lack of internal policies, as we've emphasized throughout this presentation, as well as the issue of capacity and skills around employees who deal with disciplinary procedures. We also direct that departments must maintain accurate records of all employees on precautionary suspensions to monitor progress and address the challenges involved in each specific case. There is a need to expedite investigations and finalize hearings of cases to avoid disappearance of witnesses and documents, as well as ultimately because we do this, yes, because there are moral issues and mismanagement issues and often even criminal issues which lead to these precautionary suspensions, but at the end of the day, it does impact quite seriously on service delivery, where you have officials, and they could be key officials at whatever level they sit in the system. It undermines effective service delivery, and that's really one of the key issues that needs to drive our tightening up around the management of precautionary suspensions. And then obviously the issue of the prescribed timeframes will not only lead to greater efficiency and effectiveness, but it will also reduce the costs related to salaries of employees who are on precautionary suspensions for lengthy periods. $54 million during the 2010-11 financial year, that's only national departments. I'm sure if we get the accurate information from provincial departments, that amount is going to ramp up quite significantly. So I think there is an issue of concern around the financial implications of the mismanagement of precautionary suspensions. I thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm sure members now have got even a much more bigger picture from both the presentations that were done. I will be able to take some discussions on this matter, Honourable Detroit, Honourable Murray, Honourable Williams, in that order, starting with yourself, Honourable Detroit.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've worked out here, it seems that the 99.2%, I'm referring to slide 14, 99.2% of these cases are in the security cluster, police, correctional services, justice and constitutional development, and Department of Defense. Is it not ironic that these are departments where the people working there on top level should know something about discipline and law and order, and they should have a feeling for these kind of things, and yet they are not, they don't have policies in place and they have no discipline? It is actually shocking. If you look at the situation that we have, that I think it was reported 27,000 police personnel does not is not qualified to handle firearms. Now, if somebody is suspended for pointing a firearm, perhaps, or there's some assaulting a member of the public or something like that, you can't really transfer this person to another because it's inherent, it's a problem. But, you know, so I'm just saying, in the detail that I see here, for instance, that would be very difficult. I know that not the finest detail can be given to us, but it's shocking to me to see that 99.2% is in the security cluster. So I think there's not only, as the conclusion says on slide 22, it says that there's a low level of compliance prescribed in management of discipline resulting from a lack of understanding of disciplinary procedures. Now, it may be so in others, but again referring to the security cluster, this is shocking. It must be a lack of will, I suppose, because if you look at what is the main function of police, senior level, it means investigation, means reports, it means follow up quickly. And the same with people dealing with looking after criminals. You know, you can't just let a guy run and then write a report about it and then follow him if he breaks out of prison. It's got to be quick. You've got to think quick and act quick and be on procedural. So this is what I'm saying is if you're talking about a security cluster and there's no investigations and no follow up, this is almost criminal negligence, because these people are experts at this and they're not doing it. 99.2% of the problems we're sitting here today is in the security cluster. That's shocking. And I must say to the Commission that your recommendations, when I read through the problems, it really, a lot of these things came to me myself. And I'm glad to see that you've got these recommendations here. I must commend you on it. That's a bit of a silver lining around a dark cloud, because I can see that you know what you're doing and you know what needs to be done. So thank you for that. But I just have to repeat once more for the third time. It's shocking to see that in the security cluster, this is the situation. And I think we must look at that. Thank you.
Yeah, before I go to maybe Honorable Marais, you know, was that point Honorable Du Toit is talking about, I didn't think about it. And possibly the department will hear us here. Is it not a matter of the department being efficient in terms of outlining the statistics in terms of what is it that is not happening well as compared to maybe others who do not have the statistics at all? I don't know. I was actually thinking it in the line of a discussion that once took place when we started to see the statistics of, women violence, you know, child rape. There was a time when we started to say, this thing is really growing. We didn't realize, people would think that people are now being raped in majority, you know, the violence is in majority. Well, there's another factor where people are starting to voice out. They're able to go and report the cases to the police and say these are the issues. You know, we had to weigh that possibly we are now making inroads on the campaign to voice out what is not happening appropriately. So we would like you to weigh this matter. Tell us, you know, because I am aware that it's not all departments that we're able to outline, so that you don't find people who are efficient in terms of stating out what is it that is wrong. you know, are seen as the most bad people as compared to those who cannot even tell us what is wrong in the departments, if we're able to weigh it along that. Okay, can I proceed to Honorable Mare?
Thank you very much, Chair. Obviously, you know, Prof, this is excellent. I think this is highlighting the problems that many of us has talked about. The recommendations, I want to join my colleague and say this is really excellent, and it gives you a lot of hope that there are commission like that at least can point down and identify the issues. And I think even the recommendations is good. I think it's not so good for the DG of DPSA. He has just said to me that they don't know all this information, and here comes the Public Service Commission with the information. It seems like it is available if you want to get to the information, and it's a huge concern that the Department of Public Service and Administration doesn't know what is going on in the civil service. Quite clearly, it is much bigger. And it's not only that 50-odd million that the professor has referred to. It's more than often, and maybe the DG of DPSA must tell us, how many people are there that gets acting allowance? Because remember, sometimes when people act in a position where somebody has been suspended, they are eligible for acting allowances as well. So it's not only the money that you pay to people that is on suspension, the full pay. It is not only the productivity and man hours that you lose, but it's also the acting allowances that you pay. And maybe the DG of Department of Public Administration, he can give us that information. I think clearly the department must do a hell of a lot more to help us. I mean, if we want to have an effective civil service, surely, and I've made a couple of notes, and I say this is within human control. Or the majority of these issues are within human control. So in other words, it is somebody that it's either, I mean, the prof has identified a lack of capacity. Now, if you have got a civil service and you identify, and the Planning Commission has identified that as well. So this is across political boundaries that this has been identified, and I get the impression that the Department of Public Service Administration don't push those points that others are pointing out. So really, I mean, we have to do more, and somebody must bring in discipline. And it's only to the department that we can look and say, you have to do more. It is just not good enough to say that you must first acquire this data. All these departments are known. All these financial annual reports are available. So you just have to go and analyze it. Then you have the information. If you look at that average of people on full pay suspension those number of days, it is just costing us too much money. My proposal will be to implement these recommendations. We have heard that the Public Service Commission hasn't got a big enough budget. Then we can transfer that money from the Department of Public Administration to the Commission, because surely it implies a lot of money has been wasting that could have been used more effectively and productively. Thank you. I'd like to have the comments from the DG.
Okay, Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to talk to the staggering 51.9 million rand that's spent on the salaries, obviously, of the people who are suspended. I also want to just, and this is a question, does the department spend money on its labor law consultants, which are obviously losing the cases? So there's that money there as well, which would be quite a substantial amount. And if somebody could tell us how much money that is throughout the public service, I'm sure it's more than 51 million rands. And we need to know why we aren't taking an organization like Palama, for instance, to train HR management throughout the public service. Why aren't they being pulled in, roped into this? We've identified this problem. and it's been coming for quite a long time. So I just want to know that. What is the amount of money spent on labor consultants, and why haven't Palama been pulled in to train across the public service? Thank you.
Honorable Mohale. Thank you, Chairperson. In addition to what you've just said, I would like to say maybe when we look at the security cluster, it's not only the men and women in uniform, but also the administrative staff. If we could also maybe get that statistics, because it might also be the administrative staff plus the others in uniform. And secondly, on what slide is this? It's lost. Okay, somewhere there. Somewhere I remember what I was going to talk about. Is the Department of Public and Administration saying that in all the departments we've got labor relations officers who are well trained and their sections fully functional, and the problem is just somewhere up above them, not within the labor relations section, because disciplinary actions start in the labor relations section. So if they are fully functional, then we'll get to the bottom of, but where lies the problem? If they are trained, but where lies the problem? Because if someone instructs you to say you should suspend this person, but there are other avenues that you'll have to explore. Because you cannot just suspend. At the end of the day, the issue is going back to come back to you. You were supposed to follow these procedures. You didn't follow procedure. And the other thing is just the addition on the money spent on people on paying for people who were acting on the positions of those who were suspended at that time, because it might be a lot of money people have been paid. The person who was suspended is being paid, and the person who's acting is being paid. And then in terms, it's just that the Auditor General is not here. Then in terms of the audit opinions, what does it say? Because we are paying two people, like, for the same, at the same position. Or I don't know how they do that. But the impact of that, whether that is a wasteful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, or whatever. Because if they were here, they would assist us in that direction. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, thanks. Lastly, Honorable Nyakembe.
Thank you very much, sir. In the presentation, you spoke of departments need to have their own policies in dealing with these matters, in particular matters of discipline. Don't you think that the Public Service Administration, even if it will not necessarily draft a policy for all the departments, but at least to have guidelines as to which areas the policies need to reflect. I'm raising this chair because there are labor relations officers, I think, in all the departments. Now, that becomes you don't just employ somebody for that position. You look at the person who is well-grounded in relation to matters of labor relations. But the report and the investigations presented today are reflecting that even those labor relations officers, they don't know what is it that they are supposed to do. So I'm linking this issue of the police, whether the Department of Public Service and Association can't guide the department's relation to that. That's one. The second point, sir, is in the report, in the presentation, in fact, let me put it that way, that's public service and administration. You are saying that investigations, if for argument's sake, one has been suspended, precautionary suspension, which might not exceed 60 days, and I agree with that, because in a way you are compelling the one who have suspended to do the work that they are supposed to do, in particular investigation, because suspension is not just suspension, it's suspension because there is serious investigations which the presence of that worker will disturb the process of investigation. So I'm saying, in an event where this is not adhered to, what measures now the department will follow in order to make sure that these are followed up? Thanks, sir.
Thanks, honorable members. I'll request the DG, Prof. Richard Levin, the Commissioner Suzani, the DG Dipofa, to respond on the matters.
Thank you, honorable chairperson, honorable members, Commissioner Suzani, and colleagues. I think a number of the points made were observations. There were some clear questions which I'll touch on as well. And I think the issue of the security cluster obviously is an issue. I think maybe together with my colleague, we could possibly consider a specific intervention with that cluster. I think we'll talk about that emerging from this meeting, that perhaps we could make an intervention to address the concerns that have been raised here in Parliament around that. Look, on the acting allowance, really, in terms of the prescripts, you only get an acting allowance if you act in a post which is vacant. So I don't think it really becomes a major concern for the way it's been articulated here. Obviously, we don't want people acting for extended periods of time, because it undermines efficiency and so on and so forth. But there is no real financial implication that we would identify, because the person is still in the position, so they don't get an acting allowance. So that's not really one of the major problems. I think a very important point has been raised by Honorable Williams, and I'm just wondering, I'm thinking, how are we going to get that information? It wouldn't be quite readily available, the amount of money spent on labor law consultants, if you like, who come in and run these cases. Often those cases themselves may involve 20,000 rand, but the labor law consultant costs almost R1 million. And then the case is often lost. I think that is a good point. But I think we'll look at if we are going to be able to get that information. It would be very important information. I think in the case of Palama, it would probably be a more comprehensive discussion, because they would certainly be able to show that they have these kinds of courses and there are people being trained on management of discipline, and within that there would be a segment of the course which deals with management of precautionary suspensions. So it becomes maybe a broader issue of training strategy for the public service, which is probably a bigger issue, and how you really get courses on very, very serious and fundamental management issues to be taken up by public servants across the board and across the ranks and levels of the public service. I think that's an important point as well, that has been made, and possibly again, as an outcome of this, we would need to talk to our colleague from Palama just to get a sense exactly about the detail of those programs, and then we can begin to see. I think that is information we would be able to bring to the committee beyond this meeting. I think then, you know, clearly we don't have well-trained people in this area of labor relations management and the specific aspect of it, the management of precautionary suspensions. We do need some interventions. We do need to ramp up and strengthen. It comes out clearly from the report, and it also comes out clearly from the DG of DPSA's presentation that they have noted this problem, and they intend taking action and making interventions, including the development of a guideline which would then serve the basis for departments to craft their own internal policies on the basis of that guideline. So, Chairperson, Honourable Members, Commissioner Cizani, those are my brief responses to the issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Just to start with the last comment which was made by the Honourable Nyakembe on what would the department do in cases where departments do not adhere to the 60 days. I think in terms of the interventions we're proposing here, because part of the problem at the moment is that as the discipline is managed in the departments themselves, it's only at the time when you get these kinds of reports that you realize how long it has taken. Now, this process where we're saying, firstly, that we have a case management system that gives us much more credible and updated information, then you are able to determine that there is a challenge here. Now, there are a number of things that can be done when this information comes to the attention of DPSA. One is that after establishing that maybe the problem is a capacity problem, this proposal that we centralize capacity, we can then say to that particular department, if your challenge is capacity to investigate and so on, let's assist using the centralized capacity that DPSA has created. If the challenge is in terms of presiding officers and all the, we can then utilize this centralized capacity to assist in that regard. But that is as far as the department can go, short of taking over the disciplinary process itself, which we are not authorized to do in terms of legislation. But the other point the Honourable Nyakembe made about guidelines in terms of internal policies, I think that's a good idea. We'll add that as a template in the guideline that we've developed now, to add as a template in terms of the content of the internal policy, which can then have further help to assist departments in this regard. I agree with Professor Levine in terms of the capacity issue, that we can't say that capacity is there throughout. I think there are pockets of capacity, but if you look at the both presentations, there are challenges that are capacity challenges here that need to be addressed. In fact, one of the things that has also come to our attention is just the issue of the location of LR units, how they get staffed, the norms and standards, the reporting lines, and so on. As one of the things that we are working on in DPSA is also to propose norms and standards around the structure, staffing, and reporting lines for labor relations units as part of building their capacity going forward. The issues that the Honourable Williams has raised, I think Professor Levine has touched on those, and it may be necessary for us to find a way to generate this kind of information, because we don't have it at this stage in terms of those cases that were dealt with by consultants, and the consultants ended up losing the cases, and well, the department ended up losing the case with the support of the consultant, and how much they were paid, and it's something that we have to look at going forward. Just finally, in terms of the comment from Honourable Marain, I think just to emphasise that in terms of the data that we're trying to present here, it's not that we don't know in terms of the numbers of people on SAS, because that information is available from the annual report. But in our report, we're looking at more than that. We're looking at the nature of the misconduct, the level of the official involved, the outcome of the hearing, for example, if the outcome is guilty or not guilty. And next, we're looking at the sanction. And so it's all this kind of detail that we wanted to include, which is not readily available from the annual reports. But I think the statistics in terms of the numbers and so on, that information, it's indeed readily available from the annual reports. But the intention was to have much more detailed information beyond just the numbers of people on suspension. I think the point about transferring the budget from DPSA to deal with discipline to PSC, I would just link it to the point I finished off with around the management of discipline in the public service. That is a decentralized function. DPSA doesn't sit with a huge budget which it should utilize to manage discipline in the public service. Our intervention is from a different level. It's from these kinds of measures that we are talking about, making sure that there are proper norms and standards and frameworks to guide the process, make sure that we avail capacity to intervene in certain instances. But it is not going to be possible for DPSA to assume the whole function of discipline management in the public service. So that budget is not even there in DPSA. It resides in departments themselves. The budget that will be in DPSA will be that which enables DPSA to fulfill its responsibilities around creating enabling frameworks and developing guidelines that are necessary, and then working with departments where it becomes necessary to assist them to take the process forward. I just think that is an important point to emphasize, that in holding the public service accountable for proper management of discipline, I think let's also make sure that individual departments themselves are made to realize that they are given the funds and they have the responsibility. In my 6 months in DPSA, I've realized how DPSA every now and then gets challenged in terms of what is perceived to be DPSA intervening or interfering in what is the authority of departments. One of the issues, Chairperson, is this one on organizational establishments, where departments are expected to consult with DPSA before they change organizational establishments, at least the first three levels. That DPSA continuously has to explain that, well, it's in consultation with the MPSA because the authority resides with the executive authority. Now, even in this case, it will be the same thing, that if we are seen to be taking over that kind of responsibility, we will have to face that challenge where executive authorities are saying to DPSA, but the Public Service Act does not authorize you to do that. And then I think it's just a matter to keep in mind that it is important to also hold the individual departments accountable, while DPSA also has to be held accountable for it to do the kind of job it's supposed to do to assist departments. Thank you.
Maybe, yeah, Honorable Mohale, Honorable Nyakembe.
Public Service Commission. Let's say, for example, a CFO has been suspended and the 60 days lapse. And there was someone doing the work of the CEO within those 60 days. The 60 days lapse. After the 60 days, I am not sure about the rules and so on, but that person has to come to a point where a person should be acting. A person should be acting at some point. The 60 days has lapsed, and someone is still doing that work. What aren't we going to pay that person at some point? Because the person is doing the work. And my other question to both of them is then, in all this, what is the role of the legal division in the departments? How do they assist the labor relations section? Thank you.
Honorable Nyakembe.
Thank you very much, the DBSA, you in the way forward, slide 11, the last slide, the third bullet point, amendments of the Public Service Act and regulations where necessary. Something that is intended to be done within 2012-2013 financial year. How are you going to deal with this? What is your plan? Do you intend to deal with this, the identification of certain areas that need to be amended in the public service? I'm not doubting the intention. Let me also say that. I'm not doubting the intention. I think the intention is also to assist in making sure that disciplinary cases are finished as quick as possible. And it is not necessarily an objective to assist the department as an employer. It's also to assist the employee in order to know what is his or her fate in that process. But how are you going to deal with this? Have you already identified maybe some certain sections within the legislation itself? I don't want you to quote those sections now, but I just want to understand, because I'll be worried if it is something that you're going to look at it now as to which section. I assume, but I just want to be certain on that. Thanks, sir.
Honorable Mare.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question to understand the practical challenges maybe at the department. In terms of the roles of especially HODs in these delayed disciplinary cases or people on suspension, the Public Service Commission certainly make recommendations, you know, that we must hold HODs responsible when it goes beyond the 60 days. Can I just find out from the DG, how does it work? How regular must HODs report on issues back to the department? And is there something that can be done to implement that they must report on these delays as well? Because often the devil is in the detail. But if you don't identify red flags, you know, then you cannot act proactively, but then you must act reactively afterwards, and then it's too late. So, because I mean, intervention is clearly needed, and there are most clearly capacity problems in the civil service. So is there something from the department's point of view, from a practical point of view, how does it work, and can there be something done? And you know, how does he suggest that we can do that?
Responses?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Basically, as long as someone is appointed in a post, you may have to act in that post, but as long as someone is appointed and remunerated in that post, you can't get an acting allowance. It's basically, that's how the system works. So even if it goes for a long time, some honorable members may recall that in 2003-2004, the DPSA in particular, but to some extent National Treasury, Departments of Education, Health, and even the Public Service Commission were involved in an intervention in the Eastern Cape. And our DG at the time, I was in the Public Service Commission at the time, together with the DG of DPSA, were full-time involved in managing that particular intervention. So I acted, for example, at the Public Service Commission as DG for more than a year. I didn't even ask for the salary or the acting allowance or whatever, but I'm just saying, as long as there's someone in the post, for whatever reason one has to act in that post, there is no acting allowance. So that's particular situation. I think, Honorable Mohali, though, you've made a very important point about the need to mobilize legal sections in departments to support labor relations units. I think that's quite important, that the orchestrator, if you like, or the conductor, the DG or the HOD, must be able to bring the different parts of the department together to bear on strengthening management of discipline more broadly. And that may or may not be happening satisfactorily in different departments. I think that is an area that we would need to look at more closely. I think then the questions really were posed to the DG of the DPSA, but I just want to emphasize one point that he made, which impacts very much on this discussion and a number of discussions which I'm sure we'll have in the future. And that is our system of decentralized public administration and management. Because often we would want DPSA to do certain things which in terms of the legal framework and prescripts they are unable to do because we have a decentralized system where departments must take full responsibility for the management of various public management practices and functions and so on. I do think it's important to consider that issue as not necessarily an excuse, but a reason to understand why we have weakness in management in a lot of these areas. South Africa and many countries at the dawn of democracy, and many countries around that time period, moved from highly centralized public management to decentralized public management. And the success has also depended on the speed with which that movement took place. So, for example, if you look in countries like Canada, they did move from having a highly centralized, omnipotent, if you like, public service commission type arrangement into a decentralized arrangement, but they took years to build up the capacity. Departments almost had to verify their capacity to deal with some of these functions before the decentralization took place. We moved quite quickly for what the historical reasons were at the time, and I think the consequence is what we're dealing with now, is where both the Commission and DPSA often are able to diagnose the problem, but the ability of the DPSA to intervene is constrained somewhat by the legal framework, which is decentralized and places direct responsibility on departments. So I just thought that it is important for this particular issue here that we understand that. Thank you.
Just two issues, through Chairperson. On the question by the Honourable Nyakang on what we intend doing practically in terms of the review amendments to the Public Service Regulations and Public Service Act, in the presentation we indicated that we've embarked on a process of reviewing the disciplinary code and procedures, and to the extent that there are areas that may lead us to revisions in the Public Service Act and Public Service Regulations, we will effect those. But the obvious one, and based on the recommendations made by the Public Service Commission, in terms of this issue of granting an extension over the 60 days in consultation with MPSA, it will have to go beyond just sitting in guidelines for it to take effect. So it has to find expression in the Public Service Regulations, so that all Public Service Acts, so that then the DPSA has, if you like, the legal standing, which it can then use to engage with departments. The question raised by the Honourable Maria around regular reporting on disciplinary cases or cases of officials on suspension. And I'm here, I'm just thinking aloud that there may be a number of aspects to look at here. One is where the committee may decide that, having looked at the high figures in, for example, the security cluster, that they may be seen as a priority area. To say, in this area, we will require on a quarterly basis to receive information from the accounting officers in those departments on statistics relating to disciplinary cases. And that will not necessarily give a fuller picture in terms of the whole public service, but it will be addressing a huge chunk in terms of the number of disciplinary cases, but also in terms of the number of employees, because they tend to have the highest number. I mean, correctional services say they employ about 41,000 employees. And if you look at SAPS and you look at Home Affairs, I'm sure you'll have similar large numbers of employees that are employed there. That could be one possibility. But the other possibility, if we are looking at the whole public service, it may be that we then say, as part of the quarterly performance reports of departments, which are generated as a matter of course and submitted to Treasury, as part of submitting those reports, there is an indication around the issue of dealing with cases of employees on precautionary suspension. It's just that information will probably not come to the committee, but those reports go to the portfolio committees through which they report, and those committees could then monitor that particular aspect to see how the matter is being dealt with. Obviously, from our side as DPSA, our ongoing follow-up will also be another source of information. We will hopefully get to a point where we get timely and comprehensive information, but as I indicated when I started, at this stage the information is not complete. But I think the first two suggestions could give much more timely information to the committee, in terms of particularly a prioritization process that focuses on the departments with the largest number of employees on suspension. Thank you.
Maybe before Honourable, Commissioner Sizani has to respond. Possibly one must just take on board lastly the comments about the portfolio committee on this matter, so that if there are any other issues that you'd really take on, Commissioner Sizani, you can be able to do so. Would you like it that way? Is it fine? Should I proceed that way? Okay, if you're okay, proceed then.
My colleagues are public servants, so I'm a commissioner, so I'm going to talk a little bit different from them. Madam Chair, the issue that has been raised of management of discipline in the public sector, and one aspect that has been taken this morning is the issue of precautionary suspension. It is a vexed question, and I would immediately concede that if you suspect an area where there is an undermining of service delivery, an area where there's a potential for abuse of power, an area where there's a possibility of a wastage of state resources, and also where there is absolute state or public service incompetence in terms of managing it, this is an area that you can choose. And you will find all those elements chosen and actually proven that it's an area that we're not managing very well in the public sector, and a number of those areas come through. But probably sometimes it's not out of plan. It's probably much more systemic, some of the challenges that face us in the area of managing the disciplinary cases. So that is why I'm saying that one of the questions I'm hearing that that the committee wants to get is information on this. I can probably agree that if you want to find something negative, you're likely to find in whatever information you call upon. The question then is, how much information can we bring to prove the point and the suspicions and the concerns that we have in this area? Because they are likely to be proven. in a number of areas of that information that the colleagues can collect and bring. But more importantly for me is, how do we address it? And that is really the challenge that I think we need to look at it much more deeply. I see my colleagues from the TBSA have an area where they've made recommendations. In the PSC, we've also made some recommendations that I think we should look at and probably produce a fuller discussion document to deal with these matters. One of the reasons I'm saying this, Madam Chair, is that personally myself, as a person who has worked in this area, both as a public servant and as also working on it now as a commissioner, is that if you look, for instance, at the area of investigations alone, it is true that public servants sometimes would not have the capacity to investigate so that they can meet the 60 days. But it is possible that in that investigation, again, there might even be a wastage of resources as we are looking for, because as Honorable Williams was quite correct in pointing out, you get a consultant, you get one of the big four companies. You suspect that a public servant did not take the three codes for 200,000 tender. You get a company, it investigates that public servant for 1 million fee, and you discipline that person brings their lawyers if it's an area that requires legal representation, person gets there, and the matter is dealt with that, and also the department will probably get somebody with some legal qualifications, and more resources are spent on that, let alone if it goes on appeal and you still pay that person to deal with that matter. But again, the other complex situation that we are now facing, Madam Chair, which is also a problem, is that it is possible, with also the politicization of this area, that it is possible that a public servant can be investigated by 5 or 10 state organizations at the same time. You get the criminal division of the police to investigate, you get the Hawks to come in, you get the public protector to come in, you get the public service commission to get in, you get a disciplinary case going on for a same public servant for probably drinking 2 drinks in a hotel, more than one, especially if the bureaucrats want to get rid of that public servant because they think it is problematic. So that's why I'm saying that there is an ambivalence about where do we draw the line about these matters of doing discipline, acknowledging that sometimes correct mistakes can be made in the public sector, and also ensuring that we have a system that is properly structured to carry out these matters in a proper way. And in my feeling, therefore, I do feel that this is the area that needs to be regulated, but I think we need to study it much more thoroughly, to look at a number of areas, to streamline how investigations are done, to ensure that we bring some independence in the area, for instance, of even the chairing, because what the bureaucrats do, they want to get rid of you as a public servant, they get a compliant chairperson, they take one charge of 3 kilometers over the limit that we have taken, they split to 6 or 7 charges, and they basically ask for you to be sacked, and you get sacked, you appeal, then when on the door of the labor court sometime, they settle and pay you 3 million to go, and they don't mind for their money. So I'm saying that you are onto something, but we need to actually look at clear solutions about how we're going to deal with it, and we need also to balance it between public servants being allowed to carry out their jobs, allowed to make mistakes when it's necessary and not be accused of being corrupt, but where it's necessary, they are dealt with it fairly and properly in a sort of semi-independent way that will achieve these things with minimum loss of resources and limiting the amount of money that are spent and wasted on these matters. So that is basically one thing that I would like to bring on the table as we are discussing this matter. Thank you.
Yeah, I would really want to also thank those comments, you know, because you know, I think it's actually starting to step into a direction that we really want to sort of get into. Maybe you know, just to indicate that you know, when we are portfolio committees in Parliament and we have to embark on a task, it you know, sometimes we do, it becomes very wrong if we deal with perceptions rather than, you know, realities and so on. And part of why we really wanted this information so that we have a you know, Is that a picture? What is it that we're talking about? You know, because precisely from your comments, Commissioner Sizani, it's a bigger task rather than, you know, just how many, 14, 18, and so on. But there are issues that are above. And therefore, I would really want to emphasize it's important for us to have a reliable data from the public service. You know, that's not a compromise from our side. It's something that it's a must. If we want information on particular areas, we definitely must be provided with that information. You know, otherwise we can't go around knocking in every door saying, is this right, is it wrong? We want the information. So the issue of reliable data from our side is critical. We do need a reliable data from the public service in order to allow us to deal with our oversight in a proper way, not with perceptions or in terms of what we really think. The other factor that comes, a very critical factor, is the low level of compliance within the Public Service Commission, which is raised from the presentation, which I very much appreciate, indicates, you know, the discipline, there's low discipline in the public service. You know, it's really bad, you know, because if low level of compliance, they actually impact on the discipline within the public service. So it's a big issue. You start from not complying, then the rest happens. I can give an example here. Why do we talk about this corruption every day as if there is no solution about the corruption? Why do we talk about it? You know, it's a talk of the day. We complain and complain. Surely if we have senior managers who are managing, why would we slip through corruption practices? They would be seeing those practices in advance and they'd be dealing with it. In other words, if managers were managing, we wouldn't be complaining about corruption, you know, for instance. So are managers really managing? If they're not, what are the problems? Part of why we commission this assignment is part of finding out what are the actual problems. You know, because surely we are dilly-dallying and we've got bigger problems and major issues to deal with in this country. We still have people who sleep without food. That's a big issue. And therefore, we can't play over these matters. We need to go to the core and deal with this task quite appropriately. So now, from our side as a portfolio committee, there are matters that I just need to sort of flesh on. We normally, or we always talk about the matters that to deal with as public service and administration cuts across. You know, you look at this matter, you know, the senior managers is not only for public service and administration. It cuts across. And therefore, most of the time, you know, we would really want to pick up issues that will influence the oversight, even of Parliament as a whole. Because once this matter, for instance, comes before us, you know, we are going to, it's important for us to inform other committees that there are some pointers on this area. Once we're doing oversight within the public service, we discover that if there's an overwhelming suspensions or expulsions, loss of cases, we need to know. So that once we do the mainstreaming, this is part of the issue. Hence our talk about the oversight public service seminar on areas that we believe are critical. Hence our collaboration, hence also zooming into the areas that we believe this can be part of what we really want Parliament to be robust in terms of doing oversight. And therefore we will from time to time need reliable data in terms so that we can inform other committees or collaborate or mainstream issues properly, you know, within Parliament. That is why the discussion about the Public Service Commission that was so robust, a reference to our Chapter 10 and all aspects in terms of that. So that's one aspect that I just needed us to realize that we were actually encouraged by what we're supposed to do in order to pick up on what we want to do, hence our program. And just to indicate, this is the beginning of a discussion on this matter. We still have many more. If you look at the programs that we've identified as this committee, one program falls to the other, and you'd notice that many more issues are still required along this topic, because it's a major topic, you know. And, you know, in the very same line that you are talking about, Commissioner Sizani. So now, along these discussions, a number of issues come on board, you know, and the reason why we have to talk about this. We can ask, for instance, is the public service intact? You know, know, we say we've got a very, you know, good policies and so on and so on. We say we're only lacking on the side of implementation. Do we have the capacity as a public service commission to deal with this huge sea that we've created, all the good policies, all the programs, all the systems? This is a fact-finding mission from our side, that is the public service intact, the same public service we talk about, is it organized, is it in order? And therefore, it's that's why we then need to look at the pointers on issues that comes out, if they inform us that we are intact. If not, what is it that we do? That's one issue. That's another issue as well. Now, we know for a fact that there have been suspensions, expulsions, detentions, and placements, and that done by each and every department. And clearly we've been saying that it's happening on an ad hoc basis. It's another factor for attention. We do need to say, if each and every department does it in a particular way, does it help these public savers? You know, does it help the state that we say it should be, developmental state? Those are some of the questions that come our way. You know, because we are noticing it's quite ad hoc. It's not correctly coordinated. So how should we face this moving into the future? Again, you know, there are issues that are in relation to the skill retention, you know, if we want a strong public service, you know, skills retention. Can we confidently say we've got senior managers that we have retained within the public service? Have we retained them? Have we been losing them? If we are not retaining them, why are we not? Don't we want them? But if there's a loss of them, what causes the loss? Is maybe the issue of suspensions part of it? Is it, you know, what is it? So we need to interrogate those issues and try to come to the realities of what is it that we're doing? Are we doing it correctly? If not, how should we correct this? So those are some of the things. We do need a strong public service. Do we have it? Is it strong? Is it intact? Does it retain the senior managers? If we can do a count from the time we started with the first group of senior managers, are they there? Are we confident that, okay, we've been retaining the skills? So we need to really pose this kind of questions. We do need to explore a discussion around these ideas. And then we come to a major issue that has been raised. We talked about it as this committee. It has been raised within some of the reports of the Public Service Commission. It has came from the National Development Plan, National Development discussion that is taking place, which also, as a cluster, we're also participating of. Do we need the head of a public service in this country? You know, in the light that you talked about the ad hoc ways of recruitment, of retention, of placement, etc., do we need the head of the public service? Can we confidently start to discuss that matter? You know, so those are the issues that once we embark on this kind of assignments, we are looking into a bigger picture rather than ad hoc and piecemeal of discussions. You know, this is an ongoing discussion that we have to confidently move into after we've done a lot of fact finding, after we're confident that we do now want to discuss that matter as this country, and we do need, we are confidently believing that we want the head of the public service. So there are things that should inform us if we want to move to the right direction. And we can sort of flash back and say, where were we, where are we, what are the things that inform us to do that? There will be also an issue in relation to maybe head of public service commission together with Palama. Do we have Palama thinking along the lines of, you know, if you want to retain the senior managers, this is the strategy of retention, of skilling, etc., you know, that we have. You know, because it should be ready by now. Palama has been in existence. Then they should be saying, okay, on skills retention, this is how we want to work. And then possibly if there's a head of the public service, we are ready for Parliament. This is the strategy. This is how we want to do it. I'm moving towards the end, and I want to say in relation to Parliament, it's that, you know, we talked a lot about the labor relations officers. I was expecting to somehow hear that relationship, that anchor, that, okay, the labor relations officers are already there. It's a package that will always be there, they're required. This is how we work with Palama as you know, a public service institute that can assist us. It can be a permanent program. Those are some of the things that we need to feel that we're ready in terms of the implementation. You know, part of what I just wanted to raise, you know, I just needed to indicate that this is it's a much more broader discussion rather than a piecemeal discussion, and therefore I would like us to take this as an assignment, you know, that we thoroughly want to interrogate, thoroughly want to engage with. And of course, at the end, I just need to signify the fact that when we talk about the Oversight Public Service Seminar, these are the issues. And therefore, honorable members, I would like to indicate that this is how I would like to conclude this discussion. And at the end, can I then just do what I was supposed to do at the beginning, to indicate the members that had been here, starting from the back, it's Honorable Qimbi, it's Honorable Bushekgo, and then here it's Honorable Mohale, it's Honorable Bushekgo, Honorable Nyakembe, Honorable Williams, Honorable Marais, and lastly, that's Honorable Du Toit at the end. Okay, let me not forget myself. There's Honorable Muloi Morupa as well in the chair. Okay, and I would like to really thank the presentation. I'm sure we've outlined our challenges now. I would like to thank the presentation from both the DG for Public Service Commission, DG Professor Richard Levin, DG Lipofa. And I would really want to thank you again, Commissioner from the Public Service Commission, Commissioner Sizani. Of course, we do have these challenges. It will be ongoing. We will be meeting again on topics that are related to this. But let us indicate that from our side, the issue of collaboration will always emphasize. We identify this topic. We identified all the institutions because we want to see that collaboration so that when we move forward, we can start to synergize for a better, you know, working together. And I'd like to thank everybody else who's been part of this committee, unless if there's a banning issue, which I can allow at this point in time. Otherwise, we have finalized the discussion for the day. Thanks to everyone. Which is adjourned.